Colleges and universities are places to get the credentials you need for your career. They're even places to learn something, but crucially and sometimes forgotten, they're also homes, a place for young adults at a crucial time in their lives to live together, making memories, getting in trouble, growing up. I'm Brian Ellison. Campus housing has come a long way over the last few decades. Students are arriving with higher expectations, and schools are trying to meet them. Today on Central Standard, we'll explore how they're doing that and why, as well as the competition they face from off-campus options. We'll also hear about new apartments catering to athletes at KU and at other schools, too. Also this hour, we've got the latest on the execution in Missouri of convicted murderer Herbert Smalls. The U.S. Supreme Court gave him an 11th-hour reprieve last night, but it's only temporary. Will he survive the day? It's all ahead on Central Standard, after the news. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Turns out student housing is changing, has changed. It's a competitive market to win students' housing dollars, to attract certain students, sometimes athletes especially, but some wonder about the impact on learning. Student housing is our topic today on Central Standard. This is Central Standard on KCUR, 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. College life. The hours of reading in the library, the life lessons learned over late-night conversations, relationships formed and strained, and of course, those collegiate living arrangements. You know, the hours spent lounging beside the beach volleyball court, tanning by the pool, stroll through the on-site art gallery, sampling the walnut pesto sauce on your tortellini. Wait, what? We're talking today about the changing face of student housing on college campuses. We'll hear from the University of Missouri and UMKC. We'll talk later about some plans at KU as well. And joining us to talk about those plans across both states are Frankie Miner. He's Director of Residential Life at the University of Missouri. He's joining us from Columbia. Frankie, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning, Brian.
And here in the studio, Eric Grosspich. He's Dean of Students right here at UMKC. Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Glad you're both here. So walk us through a little bit of history. What did student housing used to be about, and what's it about now? Frankie?
Well, it goes back, very many years. But historically, I think the approach back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, up through the 60s, it really was mostly about warehousing students. How many students can you fit in the smallest footprint for the least possible price? And that's why I see a lot of vintage housing at that point being high-rise. University of Illinois, Ohio State have 26, 30 stories because vertical was up. It was all about density of students and efficiencies and so on. But around the 80s, probably and more, we began to think about what can we do as far as from the educational developmental mission. Some of those conversations were occurring in the 60s and 70s. But really begin the 80s and the 90s, many institutions, and Columbia being one of those, began to look at more intentionally trying to focus our experience on linking with the academic mission of the institution. Concurrent with that was the growth of the private housing market. You know, there have always been the mom and pops who have had, you know, a room to rent and so on. But really, we saw taking off in the 80s in the housing boom, just this tremendous growth in the private housing market. As more people went to college, they were needed housing that the universities couldn't provide. And people were willing to charge higher and higher prices for premiums or amenities that were heretofore not really part of the equation. So I think you've got very different trends going on. What's going on the university campuses as they're seeking to upgrade or renovate their facilities, and then what's going on in the private market, which is just really rampant growth right now.
That's the situation in Columbia, where Frankie is a college town. Eric Grosspich, you're here in an urban environment at UMKC. How is it different here?
It's really not that different, Brian. We are all dealing with, you know, making our most attractive options for our students. UMKC does not require freshmen to live on campus, and so we definitely do need to provide an opportunity for them to really find their home at UMKC, home on campus, because they can pick any of our local establishments to live in.
I want to invite Arthur Lidsky to join our conversation. He's a principal with Dober Lidsky Matthey and Associates. He's a planning consultant that works with colleges, and he's joining us from Belmont, Massachusetts. Art, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Art, you've been doing this for more than 40 years. How have you seen this environment change over these decades?
Well, I think actually the way it was just described is pretty true to what we're seeing as well. I think colleges and universities are using housing as a way to improve attraction and retention, and it's become much more an important resource for the academic as well as the resident environment. So the other issue, I think, is we're seeing a lot more activity on the developer side with private housing being constructed near campuses as a way to provide some of that housing as well.
I wonder who's applying this pressure that colleges and universities seem to feel to make these changes. Is it coming from the students themselves? Is it from parents? Who wants these changes to happen?
Well, it's a little bit of all of that, I guess. I think parents definitely are looking for a comfortable and safe place for their children. And I think that colleges and universities have realized that it's really important to retain students on campus or to the institution. And so that's part of it as well. A lot of the housing was built early, you know, in major thrust in the 60s and 70s, and all of that now needs repair and renovation and so on. So a number of institutions are facing, do we repair or do we replace? And the economy is also having an impact. Having to spend money on housing is at this time is difficult, and so they're looking for ways to have it done in some other fashion, and having a private developer, for instance, come in and build housing that's off their budget, that's off the campus's budget, makes a lot of sense to a number of institutions.
Well, and the finances of off-campus housing is another factor, right? We've seen developments in the vicinity of colleges and universities that are in some cases charging competitive or lower prices to students, right?
That's correct. And some of these housing complexes are much more attractive to students than the typical dormitory or residence that a campus is providing.
So let me go to you, Frankie Miner, in Columbia. The New York Times had a front-page story in the middle of last year about The Grove, one of those, well, I think it is safe to say, more attractive, as how Art put it a moment ago. Facilities, they have swimming pools, they have beach volleyball courts. How do you compete with that?
Well, we don't really compete. I think we're going for a different market. We do have a requirement that first-time college students need to live on campus here to the best of our ability to accommodate them. We get about 90% of them in for the reasons that Art mentioned. We know historically that students who live on campus even 1 year just do better academically. They're more likely to persist. And we have at most about 6,800 beds currently. You know, we've got that's almost the size of our freshman class. So our enrollment's approaching 34,000. So there needs to be some alternative housing for students. So we don't really view it as a competition. What we're more educating our students on, when it's time to move off campus, how do you make informed decisions? Don't be attracted by the eye candy of the beach volleyball and the tanning beds. What does the lease agreement say? How much are you paying? You know, what's included in there? This issue of off-campus housing being less expensive than on-campus housing may have been true at one point, but I think you're beginning to see particularly the growth of the type of housing that's being built by developers. We're talking granite countertops, stainless steel appliances, jetted tubs. These are things that, you know, most of us waited for the good life after we'd had a college degree and earned a good living. Many of our college students are expecting those now and wanting those, and my concern potentially taking out on a lot of debt either through their family or through individually, to pay for these things, which were not really essential to a good college education, but are nice to have if you can afford them.
Well, and speaking of nice to have, I mean, Eric Grosspitch here at UMKC, we know UMKC has built a really very nice residence hall on Oak Street in the last few years. They've got the Oak Place apartments across Oak Street, just at the edge of campus. You've obviously felt like you need to reach out to make it a more attractive place to live.
Yeah, Brian, I think the key is UMKC for the longest time only had about 300 beds. And so over the past 8 years, we've expanded to about 1,500, soon to be opening a new apartment complex up on Hospital Hill that will bring us closer to that 1,700 number. So we're not anywhere near the bed count that Frankie and folks are dealing with, but it does allow us to adjust to what our students are needing. You know,
So when you had the opportunity to build new facilities, how did you build them differently than you might have or than a college might have 10 or 15 years ago?
Well, the traditional residence hall is what they call a double entry corridor, what I lived in when I had the bathroom down the hallway, shared a single room with a buddy of mine, and we kind of made those communities happen. You know, now our students are looking for suite-style housing. They want a private bathroom. They want to have some of those privacy factors to themselves. Wireless service is probably the key on all of their needs. They'll give up the granite if they can have fast wireless. But it's really kind of gearing to those pieces. What do they want to have? But then how do we create the experiences they still need to be successful on campus?
Art Lidsky, as you work with campuses around the country on this, what are the keys to reaching a financially sustainable model, a model that is attractive enough to students that they want to come, but they're also willing to participate in these better learning environments that actually are what universities are trying to offer?
Well, you know, I think that more and more we're seeing suite style apartments being constructed on campus as part of student housing. We're seeing apartments with kitchens also being constructed on campus by the institution as a way to either bring the older students back, the juniors and the seniors back onto campus, or to keep them on campus. So in a way, by creating these apartment-style housing units, they're competing with the units that might be out in the community nearby. And I do think that finances have an impact on it, because if you're providing apartment style with kitchens, then it's a question of, do you require students to be on board or off the meal plan, essentially? And I think that's an interesting discussion that has to happen on campus.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, we're seeing also on campus more and more amenities added to these complexes, such as athletic, you know, fitness centers and a variety of things that the institutions are competing with on the outside to the on-campus environment.
I want to invite our listeners to join in with their own questions and comments, especially if you are a college student or maybe you've recently been one. Where did you live or where do you live? Does that affect how you learn? Why would you choose to be in one of those fancy off-campus places? Why would you choose one living arrangement over another on campus? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're also following Twitter for your comments this morning. We are at KCURCST. I wonder, Art, are the questions that Missouri and Kansas colleges and universities any different than the campuses around the country? Do you see certain parts of the country that are leaders or maybe that are trailing behind when it comes to their attention to student housing issues?
No, I don't see any difference regionally other than the type of housing that might be constructed because of the climate and so on. I think most of the institutions are facing the same sort of pressures. There are, I think, some interesting surveys that have been done recently about the benefits of living on campus in terms of how that impacts the programs, the academic programs, and a positive impact on programs. And a positive impact on social and civic interests. There are a number of institutions that are actually, you know, merging academic resources with the residential facilities as a way to keep the academic activities in the forefront, even though it is a residential environment.
Well, Frankie Miner at the University of Missouri, the department you work in is responsible not just for dorm rooms and showers and beds, but also for a number of academic programs, right?
Right. We've about two-thirds of our students live in a community that is focused on a particular academic theme or common interest for doing that. We have our Freshman Interest Group, or FIGS program. We're nationally recognized as a leader in that program, in which we cluster small groups of incoming freshmen in common courses and live together in the residence hall. So there's a highly supportive environment both in the classroom and in the residence hall to help these students when they're most vulnerable. But we also have thematic learning communities where older students, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, can still live together with students who have shared common interests in whether it's engineering, nursing, journalism. And we find that, yeah, there's a lot of positive benefits associated with this, not only in retention and academic achievement, but appreciation and openness to diversity, decreased conduct issues, decreased instances of binge drinking. There seems to be a lot of connection. So, yeah, we've tried to actively integrate our living experience with our academic experience to the point that we have built now, we have 9 classrooms that we've built in the residence halls through part of our renovation and new construction plan that are centrally scheduled through our registrar's office. So for some of our students, going to class may be as simple as just walking downstairs.
And Eric Grosspitch here at UMKC, are there programs in the residence halls themselves that are tied to the academic experience of students?
Well, absolutely. We have the academic classrooms as well. We followed Frankie's lead on that as we built these buildings. But then we also work very closely to assign our students by their academic major. And so while we have our 6-year medical students all living in the same building, we have other groups of students, conservatory and so forth, that we do try to group to allow them to have the best experience academically, but also to engage, as Frankie has said, about creating a diverse culture, to create a diverse experience for our students.
And is there research art on what students actually want? I mean, we talked about those beach volleyball courts and the swimming pools and all of that. Do students care about those things as much as developers think they do?
Well, sure. But, you know, we just actually finished a housing study for a small liberal arts college, and we did a survey of their students, and we compared it to a survey of another college 10 years prior to that, and it was almost exactly the same results. Top priority or laundry, which surprised us completely because we thought that it would be something else. But then they wanted their own individual room. They wanted to be near friends, wireless environment, and so on. So it was more also the location became an interesting question because most of these students that answered the survey wanted to be close to the center of the campus, the core of the campus, because that's where all the activity was. It was less important for them to have some of the really special pools and so on. That didn't even come up on the list.
Wow, and that's clearly something that gives the college and university-provided housing quite an advantage.
That's correct.
Let's talk to our listeners. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. If you have questions or opinions about campus housing, let's talk to Emily in Kansas City, Missouri. Emily, good morning.
Good morning.
Emily, you're a student at UMKC?
I am, yes.
And what's your question or comment about your housing situation?
I just want to comment. I just wanted to say thank you. I don't remember the gentleman's name that is with UMKC, but the Oak Place apartments are beautiful. They're wonderful. I looked at them online. I really was interested in getting into them, but unfortunately they are still quite over-the-top expensive for me. And I had to go off campus, and I am in no means a luxurious apartment because that's not important to me. But I just needed something that wasn't going to overwhelm me in loans and debt. And so I guess my comment is that I don't think that the volleyball courts and all that is necessary at all. I agree with the laundry, with just wanting wireless. I mean, that's all that I really need, but I do need it under my price range, you know.
So, Emily, where'd you find that? Are you in a regular apartment off campus?
I am actually with a roommate, an older woman who has graciously let me stay with her in a room. And I do have my own room, my own bathroom, and it's quite cheaper than on-campus housing.
Well, let me put that question to your dean of students, Eric Grosspitch. Eric, how much does it cost to live in the Oak Place apartments?
Yeah, Brian, it kind of varies. We have 2-bedroom, 1-bedroom, and 4-bedroom apartments, and each of those do kind of vary anywhere from about $700 a month up to about $900 a month. The key is for us is that includes all of your all utilities are included, so your cable, your washing and washer and dryer, all those pieces are included in that price.
So what do you say to that concern that Emily raises that, you know, volleyball courts, schmollyball courts, but give me a cheap apartment?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime we – the one key is that all development on our campus and in Columbia as well is all funded through the student contracts. So we don't receive any state dollars. These are not subsidized housing in any way, shape, and form. All of these contracts, you know, we need to make them work. And so we're paying about, you know, $250,000 a year in utilities as well over the course of things. And so it's important for us to ensure that we are meeting our fiscal responsibilities as well going forward. I would love to be able to provide every student housing at the exact price that they want, that price point. But the reality is we are a business in that way. And we need to make sure that we're meeting all of our requirements.
Let's talk to Chris, who's calling us from Topeka. Chris, good morning.
Yeah. Just hearing this stuff, I'm just appalled. To me, it just seems like so much hypocrisy here, because this is not a situation. They've got the cart and the horse all backwards here. In the 1990s, Bill Clinton signed a change to U.S. bankruptcy law on student loans that says that student loans can't be discharged in bankruptcy, which opened the spigots so that bankers don't do due diligence. They just hand money. It's the same. It's a bubble economy, the same as the mortgage crisis, where they just hand out money for free. They're trying to convince 18-year-old kids to sign away their lives, and they're competing based on granite countertops and stainless steel bathtubs and volleyball courts and whatever, and it's all crazy. These guys are, there's no, it's a monopoly situation where they're eliminating all the low-cost housing, and these kids are needing to come to college, and they're finding that the only place they can get costs twice or three times as much as they want to pay, but they don't have a choice because there's no place cheap to rent. And so they have to go, and their bankers don't care. They just hand out the money. We here in Topeka, we've had doctors try to go bankrupt, that their businesses have gone under. And, you know, once you're unemployed for just a few years, the interest rates just snowball, so you get a debt that you can't ever get out from under.
Okay, I mean, Chris. I appreciate that. Oh. I think we understand your point. And let me put the question to Frankie Miner, who works with students every day. Frankie, do you think students are being exploited by banks that are lending money too carelessly because they know that that they'll get it back?
I don't know if they're being exploited, but I do have some concerns that I think your caller also shares, in the sense that our students are not – they come in with expectations of – they want the best. They take out a high degree of loan to pay for these things. And I think he's really accurate that what we're seeing, at least in the Columbia market, is all the development that's going on, and we're having thousands and thousands of beds built, but they're all along the same kind of business plan. There are four-bedroom, four-bath, so no one's sharing a bathroom unit, and they're going from anywhere from $650 to $800 a month, and that may or may not be inclusive of utilities, parking, internet, furniture, and other things. And so when the developers do talk with me, I say go for the market segment that no one's going for, that affordable, low cost, but still safe and secure housing, or housing for graduate and family students. There's no one really hitting that market. Most of them are tending towards these higher-end markets. And parents, I think, sometimes have a challenge because they don't want to deny their students the nicer things.
Right.
But I'm concerned about the fact that there's not a lot of diversity in the housing market, at least what I'm seeing here locally.
Well, we'll continue this conversation after a break about housing for students and how campus and off-campus life, too, are changing. We had a tweet from Kay, who wrote, "When moving to a new city on my own at 17, I chose dorm life. The biggest factor was the safety and support structure I got versus off-campus living." We'll talk about what that support structure is and how living on campus affects learning. We'll also look at a new project planned to house UMKC students up at 25th and Troost, Hospital Hill. We'll also venture out to Lawrence, where KU officials recently approved the building of a new luxury dorm, primarily to house basketball players. KCUR sports reporter Greg Eklund will join us, so we hope you'll stay with us too. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about campus and off-campus housing for students, trends nationally and locally. We're joined by Art Lidsky, who's a education consultant with colleges and universities, joining us from Belmont, Massachusetts. We've also got the Dean of Students here at UMKC, Eric Grosspich, and the Director of Residential Life at the University of Missouri, Frankie Miner. But joining us now is KCUR sports reporter Greg Eklund. Greg, always good to see you.
Good morning, Brian. My pleasure.
So, Greg, the University of Kansas is not rolling in excess cash these days, we hear, but the Board of Regents still decided that one high price tag project was worthy of support. Tell us about that project.
Well, the Board of Regents recently approved the construction of a $17 million dorm that's going to contain 55 rooms, 33 for men's and women's basketball players, and the remaining rooms for students. They haven't publicly disclosed what the cost of the room is going to be for the students, but I'm going to backtrack for a moment, okay, Brian, because when you talk about the construction of athletic dorms, it boils down to the basic question. What is the purpose of men's basketball besides getting excited for the next opponent? And basically, it boils down to men's basketball, not just at KU, but all around the country, being a great marketing tool for universities, because it's all about getting into the NCAA men's basketball tournament, a multi-million-dollar tournament that means extremely a lot of exposure and money, revenue for the universities and the conferences that they represent.
So if you're going to be successful enough to get to the tournament, you got to have the best students. And if you're going to have the best basketball players, not the best students necessarily, but the best basketball players, you have to provide
Better housing, which is what KU's argument was going into this. It's something that is going to be a combination of private funds and revenue bonds that were approved for the construction of this dorm. On the same day, they had the Board of Regents I'm talking about approved a multimillion-dollar improvement project for the K-State football stadium, but those were entirely through private funds. So, and that's what's raising the questions here is you're using not solely private funds for this project for something that, let's face it, is largely for the men's and women's basketball players. So it raises the question, what do the other non-revenue athletes feel about this? What does the regular student body feel about this, since there are only going to be about 22 rooms available in this $17 million dorm? And what kind of precedent does this set for the other state universities who observe what is happening at Kansas? And now you have an undefeated Wichita State team down there in Wichita, a state university that may want to upgrade their facilities.
Mm-hmm. So 22 rooms for non-athlete students. Why even bother?
Because you cannot have solely athletic dorms. The NCAA frowns upon that. They have to interact with the regular student body. So you cannot have exclusively athletic dorms constructed.
So let's wonder a little bit. How will these 22 students be chosen who are to represent
That's
the rest
question.
Of the student body?
That remains to be seen. We don't know that yet.
What will this facility offer? I know it's in the early planning stages still, but what will it have that makes it somehow different from, say, a residence hall on campus?
You mean like the half-court basketball court that will be inside?
They don't have those in every... In every hall?
I tend to doubt that they do.
What else will they have?
A nice foyer area. I'm not sure of all the amenities, but I would suspect that they would be plenty comfortable for the residents.
I imagine that's right. I heard they're pretty nice apartments. How does this, Greg, compare to the trend in other athletic programs around the country? That certainly is not just a KU thing.
Well, this is part of what is referred to as the arms race in college athletics, upgrading facilities, upgrading residential halls, and consequently the raising of coaches' base salaries is going up and up, and because everybody feels that to get the best athletes, and KU hasn't done too badly to this point, that you have to upgrade, constantly upgrade to appeal to those potential student athletes.
We heard a lot about the University of Oregon in the last year. It's not their housing exactly, but it's the football performance center that's
sure.
cost $40 million and has a lot of the comforts of home, even if it isn't housing.
Yeah, with the help of a man named Phil Knight up there that
right,
they've done tremendously well.
President of Nike. Let me ask you, Art Lidsky, how does the treatment that athletes receive on campuses fit into these broader questions of student housing?
I do know that, the NCAA regulation says that 50% should be athletic students and 50% should be non-athletic students in terms of what they will allow or approve in terms of athletic housing. So
maybe the non-athletes have to live four to a room.
theoretically, should all be the same. Now, I don't know how they're getting away with not having 50-50 on this project. Maybe I thought that they were. I thought it was 32 and 32, but that's, I have no idea.
We'll check it
but
out.
In any event, a lot of the Division I institutions, not all of them, but many of them, provide housing for athletic students as long as they're also providing the comparable housing for non-athletic students. And it is, you know, special housing of one type or another, and much better than the probably earlier type of housing that the institution provided. And it is a competitive world out there, and they're all trying to outdo each other. Same way that we're seeing the developers on the housing that we just talked about earlier. So how they choose the non-athletic students is really an interesting question. I know at University of Georgia, they've just built about 1,200 bed complex with about, I think, 200 or 300 athletes in it. So they're really having an interesting mixed of students. I also know that there are some institutions that, by policy, do not want to provide different type of housing for their athletes, students. I think it's Notre Dame does that. So it really depends, but I do see more and more of the Division I institutions moving along in the same direction as KU is.
Well, Frankie Miner, you're at the University of Missouri. Do you, in your role with Residential Life, have jurisdiction over dorms that are primarily full of athletes?
No, we our percentage of athletes is well below the 50% in any of our residence halls. We work closely with the athletic department in providing some housing, but it's distributed across a wide variety of halls, both our community style and our suite style. Some of our residence halls are open during the break periods. A majority of our halls close during the Thanksgiving semester and spring break, and that interferes with some of the athletic practice and even game schedules. So some of the athletes are placed in those halls by virtue of their operational schedule. But our athletes are in the same type of rooms that our other students are in. Again, we do reserve certain ones for certain athletes based on the number of spots per sport. And again, as far as amenities, they're not furnished any differently other than potentially some extra long mattresses, because some of these athletes can be pretty tall.
That seems like a reasonable accommodation. Eric Grosspich, I've read that even for non-athletes or for students who are not necessarily recruited athletes playing for the school, but all students seem to care a lot more about the fitness facilities, about the things that are offered to them. You're looking at building some new housing here at UMKC, and that was part of your consideration, right?
Yeah, we had a number of market studies done, and one of the big keys for us on Hospital Hill was the students wanted an opportunity to exercise, have some fitness going on in their process. And so the new apartment complex that we'll be opening in the fall will include a fitness center for all students on Hospital Hill, and actually for all students could use it. Faculty and staff as well.
We're talking about campus housing today. Would love to hear from our listeners. What questions do these arrangements raise for you? Would you learn well with the distractions of luxury accommodations off campus? If you were an athlete, is there a good reason to have some facilities that are geared toward your needs? Do you learn better when you're comfortable? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's talk to Krishna calling from Olathe. Krishna, good morning.
Very good morning. So my question was around international student housing. So I've been a master's student at Virginia, and what I've observed is that, you know, when you come into this country new, you're paying a higher exchange rate. You know, you don't know what the housing market is. You don't have a lot of information. And then once you compare the prices between the on-campus housing versus apartment complex that is in the vicinity of the campus, you typically see that the campus housing is way more expensive than what the other apartments have to offer. So I'm just wondering if the university is considering some kind of housing equations for international students based on either the country of origin or the exchange rates, and also based on the culture.
Great question, Krishna. Really appreciate you calling. Art Litsky, is there research on how various colleges and universities accommodate international students?
You know, I don't know of any research study about that, but I do know of instances where institutions were thinking really carefully about how to provide that for their international students. Usually when an international student first comes, they have no idea about the housing market. They have no idea about what to expect. Usually they come with no car, so it means that they need to be really close to the campus, if not on campus. So I think the first year of an international student is really one of trying to figure out the whole system, and the more colleges and universities can be sensitive to that, I think the better the experience will be.
Eric or Frankie, are there ways that you have sought to accommodate international students that are maybe somehow different than how you would accommodate other students?
Well, yes. At MU, we work very closely with our international center. So all of our international students are coming through the visa process, have to coordinate through our international center. So they alert us as to who's coming. We place some spaces for our international students in our residence halls, which are open during the break periods because they don't have the luxury of convenience of traveling back home, you know, for even a short break or something like that. We also have a program where we pair international students with American students. We call it Pangea, where an American student can learn about another language or culture without a passport, and an international student can have, you know, they're here for part of the American experience, can have a roommate as such. A large percentage of our international students are, though, our graduate and professional students, and we maintain separate housing for them, apartment-style, family-style housing. For them, and the demand is very, very high for many of the reasons that your caller mentioned. It's proximity, it's access, and for us, actually, we're well below the market. We've got very much vintage housing that was built for the most part in the 50s and early 60s. We've not had a chance to renovate that, so consequently, our rates are actually below market value, which our international students find very accommodating. We also have a flexible lease schedule in them so that they're, once they become more familiar with the local market, it's easier for them to get out of our lease agreement to move to a space that might be better suited for their family.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Let's talk to David in Blue Springs. Good morning, David.
Good morning. My question is, with us spending all this money on facility, hello?
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, David.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. With us spending all this money on the new facility, why can't we maintain the current facilities we have? I've got a daughter over there that's had a leak in the roof.
You're speaking of KU at this point, David?
Yes.
Okay.
It's frustrating. You know, you see a new facility, and I love the new facility, but it doesn't seem like we're able to maintain the current facilities we have.
Well, I appreciate your question, David, and we don't have anyone here from KU to answer that, but I want to ask you, Frankie, because you mentioned earlier that, you know, there are high costs to keeping up the extensive network of existing facilities. Is that a problem, or is it for some reason easier to build a new facility than to repair the old ones?
It's really all across the board. In some situations, we've made the decision that it's easier for us to tear down a facility and start fresh. In other ones, we've just renovated facilities as old as 1939 because it made sense. You have to do a building-by-building analysis. But I think your caller mentions an important point. Maintenance of existing facilities, it's not just constructing these things. It's what's your long-term maintenance program. I know at MU, prior to our significant renovation, new construction, we were spending, you know, well over 10% of our budget each year simply on maintenance. And when you've got 25 different facilities, you have to kind of spread those resources around. And again, many of these facilities have the roofs, the plumbing, the electrical service that they may have had when they were built. And for us, that was 1965. Mm-hmm. So, part of this is you have to reinvest in the maintenance of your existing facilities at the same time that you're building new or renovating facilities, and then coming up with a strong preventative maintenance program so you don't find yourself in that same situation again.
You know, Greg Eklund, you've been covering this story about the KU Board of Regents decision. What was the reaction to that so far?
I haven't really heard any adverse reaction to it. It just seemed there was only one dissenting vote that day. There are some concerns among the regents, but when it came down to it, only one dissenting vote. I also heard before the vote was taken, when Bill Self had his weekly news conference, because it's the basketball season, that he thought a new facility was needed because Jayhawk Towers, which is where the men's basketball team is staying currently, is becoming dated and perhaps going through some of the things that your caller has mentioned as far as upkeep and upgrades.
I want to revisit a topic that we covered a little bit in the first half of the program, and that's the connection between a student's housing situation and their ability to learn. Art, you cited some statistics talking about student retention and grades actually being higher for students who live on campus. How significant is the difference, and is that at all a selling point?
Well, I think it's a selling point. I think one of the problems with the development of these luxury housing off campus is that it takes away from that academic environment and the sort of culture of the campus. And I know that, I guess, the last study of these sort of living learning environments was in 2007, and it was done I think by the University of Maryland. They interviewed 22,000 students and looked at them over the year in terms of how they might improve or not have improved by living in on-campus housing with these academic programs. And it was a significant improvement in terms of their ability to address academic issues, and they were much more involved in civic and social enterprises than students who were not in these environments.
Well, I want to ask Eric Grosspitch. You're the dean of students here at UMKC, and so not just responsible for academics, but for behavior and discipline issues. I wonder, are you concerned with a high percentage of students living off campus? Are you concerned about things like alcohol use, maybe illegal activity? Does that come into your calculations of what's best for students?
Every day we have those conversations, looking for ways to engage our students. You know, we want a vibrant campus community. Housing is a big part of that. Our students who live on campus are being retained at about a 5 to 8% clip higher than those students who don't, with a 0.2 GPA increase year to year. So, you know, looking at those things, looking at those activities, our goal, as probably with everybody with student housing, is it's about engaging the students with the campus. It's great when you can roll out of bed, put your slippers on, go down and talk to a student about a test that's going on tomorrow. Those types of things are really critical to us, to the success, and that's probably one of the huge benefits of campus housing versus the multiplexes that are out and about Kansas City.
Well, and Frankie Miner, I know that story that sort of brought to national attention one of those off-campus housing complexes in Columbia, the first student interviewed in the story said, "Living here is like being on vacation. I don't think I'll ever go to class." Is there a concern about class attendance and even those very basic things about being a student that comes into play?
I'm not so certain about the class attendance issue, although it's certainly an issue. But I think, you know, Eric hit on some key points. It's really about connecting the students' living experience with their total collegiate experience. Because it's, you know, they don't experience college as a series of discrete pieces. It's all one coherent piece. And the more that we can do to make that more integrated, I think the better for the student, the more enriching the experience. So my concern is that, you know, we're not here trying to pamper the students. You know, we're doing tutoring sessions in the residence halls. We're offering classes. We're asking students how they're doing academically. So there's this persistent culture within the residence halls that succeeding personally and academically at this institution is critically important. Whereas that message is not conveyed in those private apartment complexes. It has to be intrinsic upon the student because it's just not in the culture of the housing facility or the people operating it. The difference, I think, between on-campus housing and private housing is our job is to provide the best quality living experience for our students at the lowest possible price. Our job is to break even. Theirs is to generate profit while providing similar amenities.
And we'll have to leave it there, but obviously there's a topic that will continue to play out. I want to thank our guests, Art Lidsky, president of Dober Lidsky Matthey and Associates, Eric Grosspitch is the dean of students at UMKC, and Frankie Miner, director of residential life at the University of Missouri. Thanks to all of you for being with us. and also KCUR's Greg Eklund, our sports reporter, who brought us up to speed on KU. Thanks so much, Greg. Good to have you here. You can subscribe to our podcast. You can hear this conversation again, and you can access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page at kcur.org. Join us tomorrow as we explore dyslexia and also a proposal to raise the speed limit in Missouri. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. They're looking at who set off the powder keg to start World War I and also to get your reactions to the State of the Union. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Ross Steinmetz and Kate Baxendale. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.